everybody. Welcome to Heat, Spotlight on Women by Women in Hollywood. We're here to call out stellar work by women in all parts of the film and television industries and share some shows and films we're excited about. We chose this episode's topic, comedic women, to showcase women exceedingly skilled at making us examine our expectations or bust a gut, since laughter is the panacea of the gods, oh yeah, and comedy is harder than it looks. We're a group of women talking to you about women deserving heat in Tinseltown.
Ladies, heat it up!
A little bit about us.
Hi, I'm Jennifer. I'm a writer and painter, and my brand is Kick-Ass STEM Women.
I'm Heather, a writer from San Diego.
Hey, I'm Sasha. I'm an LA-based filmmaker and horror writer.
Hey, I'm Marie, the funny feminist screenwriter.
Kiki, a scholar and producer, and advocate for the arts.
Hey, y'all. I'm Carrie. I'm a writer, director, and actress.
For today's episode, with the focus on women comedians, we thought it might help to define the role a bit for everyday listeners. In entertainment, women comedians can be geared toward bit performances as stand-up acts, physical humor, or just very savvy actors who can read a script to make the humor sing for their audiences. Many people make comedy by accident, but today we want to praise the women who do it on purpose. So let's launch this episode with Marie, our local funny feminist.
Sweet.
Hey. Oh,
yes, I'm so excited about this. You know that comedy is so completely in my heart. Yes, so I chose one of the absolute greats, Catherine O'Hara, and she has such a huge body of work that's just amazing. I wanted to talk about Schitt's Creek, so that's where I'm going to focus today, but anything that you watch with her, she is just going to be a genius with it. So Schitt's Creek is about a family, a very wealthy family that loses all of their money and they're forced to go live in this small town that the father had bought for the son, like as a joke and their last asset. And so it's like them going to this rundown small town. And I'm going to talk a little bit more about it, but I just want to talk first about Catherine herself because she's just such an amazing person with such a fun backstory. So she grew up in a big family and both her parents were really funny. So it runs in the family that she had this sense of humor and she tells these stories about how in such a big family, being funny was this way of like getting attention and being seen. So I just thought that was so beautiful. It's like in her blood for so many reasons. And then what really shifted things for her is that when she was young, just a teenager, she became friends with Gilda Radner, who just in herself is such an icon. Like she could have been someone that we chose. And it was Gilda that made Catherine believe that a regular person could do comedy, that this is something that you could just perform and do and just proceed in your career with it. So Gilda actually was dating her brother. And so he would bring Gilda home and they'd just have Gilda at their dining room table eating with the family. And she said this, the whole family got into it. Like Gilda would have her parents doing improv exercises in the living room. And I just think this is such a like beautiful way that the comedy world works and even like the entertainment world is who are the connections that you make that move you forward. And
oh
so
my
Catherine,
God.
Yeah.
I can't believe she's got Gilda Radner at her dining room table.
Oh my gosh, right? Yeah. I'm like looking at my brother. I'm like, can you just hook me up? No, he's married. So Catherine started out young. She was like 18 or 19 and she got involved in the Second City system. And a lot of people don't know this, but the Second City, it's a comedy training studio, primarily improv and sketch. Now it does have other classes, but it is a studio that then builds into a theater and it's a major one. Like it is one that is a big feeder into Saturday Night Live and they are really great at training comedic writers. So it's just a really wonderful place to start. So that's where she started. She went on cast and then she transitioned to TV with a show called SCTV, which, you know, is an abbreviation for Second City TV, which is obviously associated with the theater. And she won an Emmy for writing on that. But this thing that I want to talk about is like she had this cohort of these comedy greats that she came up with through that system. Martin Short, Andrea Martin, John Candy, Eugene Levy, who then of course becomes like a major collaborator for the rest of her career. So she's been in so many amazing TV shows and movies. Beetlejuice, Home Alone. She was the voice for Sally in The Nightmare Before Christmas. She was in Wyatt Earp and some of my favorite movies of all time. Best in Show, A Mighty Wind, Waiting for Guffman, just this amazing ensemble comedies. It's hard to choose what to talk about with Catherine. If you have not seen them, it's just these different quirky characters in these different quirky niche worlds that are just hilarious. She also did a lot of voice acting, which I didn't know until I started doing research. So, of course, what I want to talk about today is Schitt's Creek. Schitt's Creek kind of has an interesting story. It was actually a really successful show. It kind of came a cult hit, and she won a number of awards for that. She won an Emmy, a Golden Globe, a Screen Actors Guild Award, and just so many more awards for herself, and also Schitt's Creek did. It came about in a really interesting way, which was that they filmed it, aired it all in Canada, and then it was like transferred to the US on Pop TV. But by the time it was on Netflix, it had been completely aired. Like, from the actors and all the production's perspective, this show was in the past. But they called the Netflix bump. It happens for shows. They took it on, and it just went crazy on Netflix. I know when I watched it, I just binged it because it was so, so funny.
Yeah, it's unlike any other show I've ever seen.
Right? It's just witty, and the acting is so great.
And her character is so funny.
Oh,
it's
my
fabulous.
God. Yeah, she's so great with, like, the wall of wigs. Just, I loved it. Her performance is amazing. But it was really cool culturally because it was right when COVID was coming on. So we've got families holed up together. And this is a show about a family that are forced to live together under essentially one roof in a motel. And they talk about how that was something everybody could identify with, like how it just makes you crazy, but you end up bonding. And so it became super, super, super popular. A fun thing about this character, which I really love about her, is that she's really smart. So she's a former soap opera actress. And a stereotype around that could be that she had her career and maybe she was more dependent on her husband, and her husband is a wealthy man, but like, she's so brilliant. She's so intelligent. She just has this insane vocabulary, the wittiest lines. And I just love how brilliant and smart she is. And she has this accent. Do you guys remember her accent?
Oh, it's super distinguished.
Yeah.
I have a friend named David, and I'm always like doing the Moira on her. I'm like, David.
And Dan Levy said that he would just look up words for her.
Really? So,
yeah. And he hasn't really retained her vocabulary. Like, no one really has. You knew what she was talking about, but she just had the multisyllabic vocabulary.
Yes. I saw her in an interview talking about how people like try to mimic her accent. And they're like, what is this accent? And she's like, oh, the mistake you're making is trying to have a consistent accent. This is totally inconsistent. It's like a mashup of a million accents. So I also just loved her character arc. You could make the impression that she was a little shallow. She's a little guarded. She's the one that moves in the town. They're all resistant to the town, but she does the most. But then over time, you see her changing. She starts out that she's not kids, but over the course of this season, she starts really connecting and she gets involved in the communities. I just think it's so well written, and her performance is, this is the thing with a comedic actress, like when you try to explain it, part of it is in the magic of their performing. Like, you could never really explain Catherine O'Hara. You have to see her because she's just so magical. My favorite episode. Do you guys remember the Wine and Roses episode where she's doing this ad for this local winery?
Oh yeah, I remember that. And they drank a lot before. They were so drunk.
There's sometimes because she gets hired and she hates the wine, right? And then as soon as they offer her a job, she's like, oh, it's delightfully busy. The way she can give an insult that still sounds good. And just her delivery, you have to watch this episode. She does it where they're recording it. She's drinking the wine. So she's getting drunk and can't pronounce anything right. So instead of every glass, it's like every glace. She like mispronounces her own name. She's like, my name's Moina Rose. And then she ends up drunk in her trailer and Johnny gives her a pep talk. And she just talks about how like all these seasons of her soap opera she'd been on that she was drunk. And then she says in this drunk response, she's like, did I have a drink? Just the delivery. It's just the genius of the delivery. Yeah. So I admire her so much. And the dialogue for her is so good. The quote, you're so good at trying. That's like another one that has become part of my just regular life in my head. I'll be like, whenever I do something, I don't do it quite right. I'm like, you're so good at trying.
Every time I see her that she's going to be in a film, I'm like, this is going to be good.
Yes. It's going to be so good.
And I think some of that magic you're talking about, Marie, is so relevant in terms of the accent issue you were discussing. Because even the way that she said something, it was just so funny and so unexpected. Be careful, John, lest you suffer vertigo from the dizzying heights of your moral ground. Like, I mean, I'm not doing it right, but I can't even do her accent, but it's like enchanting. You can't look away from it. You can't listen away from it either.
Yeah, her performance is just so genius. I mean, it's a whole cast of geniuses, written genius. It's just an absolutely brilliant show and just so sharp and beautiful. I would recommend checking it out. It's so bingeable. And she's going to be in the upcoming Beetlejuice, which I'm so excited about.
She
That's
is.
So much fun to have her back. Like, her and Winona Ryder are both back in the movie. It's going to be amazing.
I'm so excited for that.
Like, I'm sold so just because they're returning.
Oh, yeah. And Michael's going to be in it too. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Because Jenna Ortega, I think, plays Winona Ryder's character's daughter, Lydia's daughter.
Oh, that's going to be so fun.
Yeah.
So it's going to be a lot of fun. Awesome. Marie, were you on the internet the day the younger generation realized that the mom from Schitt's Creek was the mom in Home Alone?
No.
That was the best internet day ever when people were like, holy When people discovered that, that was one of the greatest internet days that has happened because people's minds were just blown.
Oh, amazing. Told a story. I saw her in an interview. She told a story about how this little kid came up to her in a mall and was like, are you, whatever Macaulay Culkin's name was, like, are you his mom? And she's like, oh, I explained him by playing his mother as a character. And then the kid basically is like, why did you leave him alone? Hassling her on her parenting. She's like, you.
I mean, it's true. Like, they're on the plane and they don't realize he's there. So.
Right.
I mean, it happened twice. When does CPS get involved in these sort of things? What is happening?
Right.
Like,
right.
Way sooner than that. So, Kiki, can you share your choice with us next?
Sure. The TV series that I selected was Loop. It streams on Apple TV. But before I get into the TV show, I want to give some background about my comedic actress selection, Maya Rudolph, because she's just so amazing. Maya is the daughter of singer Minnie Riperton and composer Richard Rudolph, who was born in Gainesville, Florida, but raised in Los Angeles. She started out in the improv troupe, The Groundlings, which is really prominent in LA, and then joined the cast of Saturday Night Live in 2000 as a feature player for the final episodes of the 99-2000 season and ran through as a cast member until 2007. She's made return appearances over the years, most notably portraying Vice President Kamala Harris, which earned her 3 Primetime Emmy Awards. Has anybody seen her as Kamala Harris on Saturday Night Live?
Yes.
No, but I want to.
Yeah,
absolutely amazing. She started
bringing some major trivia. I had no idea she was Minnie Riperton's daughter. That's just so incredible.
Isn't it? She starred in numerous films and television shows, including guest starring on The Simpsons in the Homer of Seville episode, NBC's Kath and Kim, CBS's City of Angels, and Chicago Hope, the film Away We Go, then Grown Ups as Chris Rock's wife, and she also reprised that role in the sequel, The Way Back, as the girlfriend of Sam Rockwell's character. And I hope everyone has seen her as Lillian, the bride from Bridesmaids, along with her SNL colleague, Kristen Wiig. And she's voiced many memorable animated characters. Her big credits in animated films include Shrek the Third as Rapunzel, the mom Linda Mitchell in The Mitchells versus The Machines, Big Hero 6, the Angry Birds movie, the Emoji movie, and Daniela Peguero in Luca. She also voiced numerous characters in the Netflix series Big Mouth, including Connie the Hormone Monstress, which earned her 2 Primetime Emmy Awards. Maya also forayed into music like her famous mom and composer father, recording a track with the Rentals frontman Matt Sharp, including a cover of Tegan and Sarah's Not Tonight. My favorite thing that she's done musically, she performed Together in Pooping and Little Round Worm with Triumph the Insult Comic Dog on his album Come Poop With Me.
Okay. Oh my God, I have to listen to that.
Yeah, another fun fact, she is also in a Prince cover band called Princess with her friend Gretchen Lieberum.
I want to hear every song.
Yeah. If they ever play in LA, I'm going to be in the front row.
Me too.
She also has a production company called Animal Pictures with Natasha Lyonne, which produced Russian Doll, Poker Face, and Loot, which is the series that I'm going to get into shortly, along with the new Prime Video animated series, The Second Best Hospital in the Galaxy, which is also quite hilarious. She's performed in advertisements for Ruby Tuesdays and Seventh Generation, and Maya was also announced in 2003 as a spokesperson for Eminem's Spokes Candies amidst the criticism for its depictions of gender. Loot, the TV series I selected, started in 2022 and stars Maya as Molly Novak, the recent divorcee of a tech billionaire, which lands her around $87 billion in her divorce settlement. The show focuses on the misadventures of an obscenely rich woman who is so out of touch with the real world and who she is as a woman. It is a comedic goldmine. After she decides to go work for the foundation she started with her ex years prior, how blithely ignorant she's become to how life works becomes readily apparent. My favorite is when she showed up to a woman's shelter opening with her and the staff after picking them up in a fleet of Cadillac SUVs and then proceeded to hand out overpriced gift bags to unhoused women. Or maybe the time she stole her staff for an impromptu trip to Miami that she wanted to attend for the fragrance launch of one of her spoiled girlfriends packing them up like luggage on her private jet. The perfume smelled like ass, by the way. I think they referred to it as cheetah placenta or some kind of cat musk or something crazy like that. The show is completely hilarious. Okay, I know I can relate to losing myself and my relationships, and the series makes a woman finding herself hilarious and makes me feel a whole lot better about my journey of self-discovery and finding out the role that I want to play and entertainment. Season 2 of Loot begins on April 3rd. I suggest you check it out. It definitely gives me Mackenzie Scott and Jeff Bezos vibes.
Yeah, they actually based it on Mackenzie Scott.
I thought so.
Yeah, they did. Yeah. Because I've seen that series. I'm so glad it got renewed for a second season.
But, me too.
That's a great scene. They do get really pissed off.
Yeah, they got so mad at her. And she calls them to miss a really important meeting with someone they were trying to build with in the city government.
Right. Yeah. I remember that. It's really well done. Everyone is great in it. And it does show how ridiculously rich she is.
What do you think makes Maya herself so awesome in terms of the comedic work that she's doing? Is there some certain facets of her acting that you're really drawn to?
I mean, it just seems like she has really great timing, you know, like timing is really everything. And she's just someone who's naturally funny.
Yeah.
I feel like her
face expressions are
that too. Yes. Yeah.
Yes. Her characters also have this warmth to them. They have this like sweet connectedness to them, which I really love about her acting.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. You want to be her friend, even when she's acting really badly.
Yeah, that part.
I know that feeling. So great. Well, awesome. Thanks, Kiki. Carrie, did you want to share your pick?
Awesome. Yes. Okay. I picked Cameron Diaz in the film There's Something About Mary, directed by the Farley Brothers and released in 1998. The film stars Cameron Diaz in the role of Mary and co-stars Ben Stiller as Ted Stroman, along with Matt Dillon, Chris Farley, and Lee Evans, and even a cameo by Brett Favre. All playing characters vying for Mary's love. Why, you might ask? Well, because there's just something about Mary. If you remember in the film, as sung by the musical duo that pops up in between scenes in the film to give the audience perspective of the love triangle, quadrangle, pentangle, I don't know, all of these like love connections, and belts out the moral of the story at the end of the film, love's not civilized. Like, we need to hear that. It's not even pronounced correctly, but it really underscores the humor of the film and Cameron Diaz's brilliant performance throughout. Also in the film, highlighting and playing off Cameron Diaz's humor is her next door neighbor, Magda, who's like this octogenarian post-coital banana split eating neighbor. And Magda's dog, Puffy, who has 9, 10, 15 lives, if you remember all those funny scenes with the dog. The dog is defibrillated by Matt Dillon and caught on fire, but still somehow lives. Even Magda's elderly boyfriend admits he's just boning Magda to get close to Mary because he too is in love with Mary. So this film is hilarious because everybody's in love with Mary. The plot centers around Mary's 1995 high school senior prom date, Ted, who's played by Ben Stiller, but due to an unfortunate zipper injury with his Frankenbeans, he had to go to the hospital instead of the prom with Mary. And he develops this unrequited love for the following 13 years of his life. So flash forward, 13 years later, Ted is still fantasizing about Mary. So he takes his friend's advice, Dom, who's also secretly in love with Mary, to hire a private detective to track down Mary in hopes of maybe getting a second chance with love at her. So this private detective tracks down Mary. The private detective is played by Matt Dillon, who's also a super funny character in the film. And he tries to throw off Ted off the track. He tries to tell her Mary's overweight, unattractive, and in a wheelchair. This doesn't really deter Ted ultimately. Matt Dillon's character goes down to Miami where Mary's character is living and tries to seek a relationship with her. But then it's foiled by Mary's pizza delivery guy, who's also in love with Mary, who takes on a fake persona to also get closer to Mary. Anyhow, this all culminates in a more calm than rom-com that takes the audience on this laugh out loud comedic fun ride to see who can win Mary's affection in the end. I chose Cameron Diaz and her performance in There's Something About Mary because to date, it is still the funniest movie I've ever seen. When I first saw this film in 1998, it made me laugh so flippin' hard that snot
ran out of my nose. And every time I laughed, I like snort laughed at all of the outrageous punchline. I literally have never laughed so hard. Yeah, no, snort laugh. You know, like that. Oh, yeah, I was snorting. It was, yeah. And it was really embarrassing. And there was like snot in my nose and the back of my throat. What makes it so funny, and Cameron Diaz's performance to me really hits home as so humorous, because she delivers a type of straight comedy that holds the spine of the story together with her own brand of humor, which is very not on the nose. And her humor is both endearing and hilarious, along with her ability to effortlessly deliver punchlines and physical comedy perfectly. The hair gel scene in particular highlights Diaz's comedy. Do you remember that? Like, and in her hair.
That was absolutely disgusting, but so funny.
Disgusting and funny. And
I was way like, too young and did not understand that scene the first time I saw it.
Oh, Sasha. I'm sure it marred you for life. My gosh, it did like all of us, but like we weren't quite as young as you. At least I wasn't. But the hair gel scene, I mean, how Diaz holds her comedic straightness, but yet it's a comedic brilliance as she navigates the awkwardness of the situational humor with impeccable comedic timing and finesse, making it one of the most memorable moments in comedic film history, I believe. What's interesting about Cameron Diaz is she has grossed over $3 billion by all the films she's been in. By 2018, Diaz was the fifth highest grossing actress at the domestic box office. Diaz was born in San Diego, grew up in Long Beach, and after modeling for a while during high school for notable brands such as Calvin Klein, Levi's, Coca-Cola, she landed her first acting role at age 21 opposite Jim Carrey in the film The Mask, followed by a supporting role in the romantic comedy My Best Friend's Wedding. Remember when she was in that film and there was the scene where she sang karaoke really off key?
I sing that badly in karaoke. Yeah. She makes me feel real good about it.
Me too. Oh my God. Thank you, Kiki. Full circle moment. Me too. Right? Yes. Diaz went on to act in numerous other films, including being John Malkovich, Vanilla Sky, Gangs of New York, Charlie's Angels, The Holiday, a major favorite film of mine, The Green Hornet, and others, making her mark as both a dramatic and comedic actress. She was also the voice of Princess Fiona in the beloved Shrek franchise.
Seen Shrek like 300 times, I have to say.
Yes. Here we are full circling again with Shrek, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
The soundtrack of my children's entire childhood.
Oh, my God. Yes, and I was in a theater version of Shrek. Anyhow, I love Shrek. Diaz retired from acting in 2015 to focus on family after marrying musician Benji Madden, the lead vocalist of the band Good Charlotte. She had a daughter in 2019. Another interesting fact that I had no idea until I researched Cameron Diaz is that she's written two health books. First, The Body Book, which was published and is a New York Times bestseller. And then in 2016, The Longevity Book. Diaz is reportedly back to acting. She returned in 2022, and we may be seeing new work from her in the near future, which I super hope so. I really feel like Cameron Diaz just has some sort of unique, not on the nose comedic timing where she plays like the straight comedic actress, not only in Something About Mary, but also in My Best Friend's Wedding. Like she's funny, but doesn't know she's funny. And that's funnier. And that's why I love her so much.
She has this earnestness about her. She really has this deep, funny soul, and you are on her side.
I mean, she also, you feel for her in every, I mean, I love her in The Holiday as just a woman who's absolutely falling apart. And she's just so, the scene in the grocery store where they ask if she's having a party and she's just like, sure am. And it's just her lounged in her PJs on the couch with an open bottle of wine in one hand and snacks on her stuff. That is my Saturday. That is my perfect Saturday.
Yeah, we've all had that party.
Opens the bottle of wine in the market and starts drinking from the bottle, straight from the bottle in the market. Yes, I love that scene in The Holiday, Sasha. Thank you for bringing that up.
I think that all of the actresses who are the funniest actresses also have the largest capacity for revealing vulnerability and pain, right? Isn't there that interesting duality when you look at people who are truly excellent comedically? It's just that they have this broad spectrum for what they can show, kind of, maybe?
Yeah.
Yes.
What do you guys think?
I think so.
I think it's harder to be funny as an actor than it is to be serious.
Yeah.
Yes.
Because I totally agree, Sasha.
You can have a breakdown moment, like a breakdown moment on screen, and that takes a lot, I think, for an actor, and they have to go places that I would never want to go. But being to get a funny line out, that takes timing, and I feel like it's harder to make someone laugh than it is to make someone scared or cry.
That's true.
Yeah. She was really good in Being John Malkovich, which wasn't necessarily a straight comedy, but just the whole escapade. That was such a weird film.
Absolutely brilliant. Her and Catherine Keener played really well off to each other. And I love Catherine Keener.
That's amazing. Well, Jennifer, take it away. Why don't you go next? Tell us your choice.
I chose Kristen Wiig for her role in Barb and Star Go to Vista Del Mar. And it came out in 2021. And Kristen Wiig and Annie Mumolo wrote and star in it. So here's what the film's about. It's lifelong friends, Barb and Star, embark on the adventure of a lifetime when they decide to leave their small Midwestern town for the first time ever. We know Kristen from SNL and also Bridesmaids, which her and Annie Mumolo wrote together. And that earned $169 million at the box office. Yeah, that's a lot. And so, and Annie was actually in the film. She's next to Kristen when she's in Coach, when, you know, everyone else is
in. Oh, I remember that part.
Yeah.
And she was in that.
Right? And she's just like, we're going down. So for this film, they play middle-aged characters, women characters that they started crafting at Groundlings. And just Maya Rudolph was in Groundlings. It's an improv and sketch comedy theater in LA that's been around for 40 years. And you can really tell that her and Kristen were in the same cohort in the Groundlings because they do these bits together that are just hilarious. And I also want to point out that Jennifer Coolidge was an alumni as well. So anyway, so they've been doing Barb and Star since the early aughts in the Groundlings. And you can really tell because Barb is Annie Mumolo and Star is Kristen Wiig. And they have this like lilting Midwestern accents that's not like too far go, you know, because they'll go Barb and Star and they talk over each other. And it's this comedic genius, the way that they talk over each other, but they're still distinctly separate. And you can follow along their stories at the same time. And then how they just sort of weave them in. Just a wonder how they're able to do that. And so the great thing about this film is how bonkers it is. It's unimaginable, crazy things happen, but we're always grounded with Barb and Star's folksy, positive outlook. The first scene is so hilariously left field. It introduces an evil lair and an outrageous villain. And so we know that something's going to go down in the film. And then we get to Barb and Star and they're sitting on a sofa drinking tea. And it turns out it's a Jennifer convertible store and they're employees. And when somebody wants to buy the sofa, they refuse because that's where they chat every day. and they get called in by the manager and you think it's because they didn't sell the couch. But really, it's about the store closing because the chain went bankrupt 6 months ago and they forgot to tell this store in a tiny town. So their whole life falls apart. And we see how mundane and dull it is. They have this talking group and they get kicked out of it. And then when they begin their epic adventure, they often juxtapose this boring group just to show how far they've come. So it's a really funny bit. So part of what is so good about this is, you know, that they've been living in these characters and the way that they dress, they look like they have like 80s mom's hair, you know, with the curls and everything. And they wear bright colors and they wear culottes. They even have formal culottes. Culottes are pants that kind of flare at the ankle and they kind of look like a long skirt. So, and
they're so fucking weird. Oh, pardon my language. They're so weird, those pants.
So they go to this fictional town, Vista Del Mar, it's in Florida, where everyone is middle-aged. And then we get the evil lair crossover because the female villain's gorgeous minion is at the resort town too. So you know something big is going to happen. It's about saving the town and their lives. And this male minion is played by Jamie Dornan, who was in 50 Shades of Grey and also The Fall. And he's so handsome. And Kristen and Annie flip the script. He plays a male character that acts like every other female character ever, where he's desperate for love. He's totally into the villain, but she's cold to him, and he only ever wants to be official with her. So he's like a male wanting that relationship validation and moping about it, and it's so funny. So anyway, they get with him in the most unpredictable way. It's just so crazy. And then in the end, all this weird side plot bits that you forgot about, even the culottes, are tied together in this glorious finale. What I like about how great this film is the writing. Just like in Bridesmaids, and actually I watched Bridesmaids before I watched this one, and I have to say that I like this one better because it's just so ridiculous. And I also, it's a funny fact, Jamie Dornan, the male minion, he was in a Golden Girls fan club when he was young, and his favorite character is Sophia, the oldest, who's played by Estelle Getty.
I love her.
She was my favorite character too.
Right?
I still know that theme song.
Yeah. So it also, the film also features Richard Cheese, who sings covers of song in a real cheesy way. I don't know if you've heard of Richard Cheese. He's worth listening to. But anyway, so he plays a piano player who sings a song about Booby that Kristen wrote. And you can just really feel that they've been inhabiting these characters for years. And Kristen has this way of, she's beautiful. She's a beautiful woman, but she does things with her face to get this kind of double chin kind of look and everything. And she's so kooky, you know, she can play all these, like the beautiful character. And she does a bit of that in Bridesmaids, but like in here, she's just like a total middle-aged dork. It's so endearing though. And so I really hope that a sequel happens because I totally want more Barb and Star. And I've realized it's like a litmus test. If someone really loves this film, then we're totally friends.
I'll definitely have to check it out.
Yeah.
So Jennifer's at like a conference or something and she's like, what do you feel about Barb and Star?
I've dug this film so much. I absolutely, utterly loved it. It's totally my sense of humor, where they go just fantastical and outrageous, and they have that secret underworld. And I just think it was brilliant and very imaginative.
Yeah, and everything, I mean, there's a lot of unimaginable things that happen. And I also love the cameo of Tommy Bahama. Like, they made him a real person.
That's hilarious.
I love that.
That's the clothing.
That's so funny.
Yeah, I love that.
I love how we have crossovers with women that they've known. Like, she knows Maya Rudolph, and just how this group of comedic actors, women, are so strong because they're also creating their own shows. So Annie was talking about how when you write for someone else, then they'll change it. And actually, she wrote for Joy. David O. Russell directed it. And then he rewrote it and then dropped her credit. So stuff like that happens. And I love that they can get together and own their comedy, like with Bridesmaids and then with Barb and Star. It's brilliant. I'm so glad that there's a comedic duo, women duo, that are doing such great work.
Kristen is my hero. She's just a genius. And she's one of these people that whatever level of genius she has, there's just another level of genius. I just remember watching an episode of SNL and like pulls out a guitar and in the sketch, and she's just amazing at playing guitar and singing. And you're just like, is there anything that Kristen cannot do? She's just what a star. Oh my God.
I love how physical she is with her comedy. There's so much movement with what she does.
I also just feel like Bridesmaids was just a game changer movie. I feel like there's been this like bro comedy genre, you know what I mean? That's been there for a while, but now we've got like sister comedy coming together, and I feel like it just changed everything. What a great movie. I've seen it so many times. I've read the script so many times. I just love what they did with it. And I loved how the love story really was the two women, like the friendship love story. And that just was like so beautiful.
Yeah,
it really was.
Coming back commuting.
My pick today is a departure from the mainstream, since I wanted to represent a really dark genre of comedy, which is black comedy. Black comedy, for those who aren't aware, is kind of a type of comedy in which traumatic or distressing subject matter is dealt with in a humorous way. I'm super fascinated by the actress that I've chosen, since she's known for mainstream hits, mostly. If anybody remembers the movie Legally Blonde, Legally Blonde 2, Sweet Home Alabama, and most recently, she was in Cheryl Strayed's Wild, and a hit show, Big Little Lies.
That show was twisted. I loved
it. So can anyone guess who I am referring to right now?
I would imagine Reese Witherspoon.
Yeah, for sure. I am focusing on one of her films that I consider kind of an anomaly in her career, one of the darkest, and also in some ways, in my view, the most profound. So Rees has gone on to have her own book club, and she's also an industry change maker via lots of her choices that she makes more recently. One thing that really excites me is her production company, Hello Sunshine, which has its message right on the website. On the very front page, it says, "We put women at the center of every story." So I felt like she would be a perfect person to pick for this month because it is International Women's Month when we're recording this episode right now. So Hello Sunshine aims to broaden the perspective, the site says, and empower women by giving them authorship, inspiring agency, and creating a platform to help them shape culture and the world around. And I just love that mission statement. So in my view, Rees is a class act in every way and a superbly talented actress in Black comedy as well as mainstream comedy and rom-coms, on top of being terrifically talented as a dramatic actress as well. So I'll tell you just a little bit about this film that I selected. Freeway is a 1996 American Black comedy cult classic written and directed by Matthew Bright and produced by Oliver Stone. It stars Kiefer Sutherland, Reese Witherspoon, and Brooke Shields. The film's plot is a dark take on the fairy tale Little Red Riding Hood, which also attracted me to it because I love me some fairy tales. I picked this movie because I have to admit that I was shocked when I first saw it. I was shocked that this was Reese Witherspoon that I was watching, and I was shocked kind of by the content that was in it, because stripping away the class elevation and the glam of her later roles, it feels very gritty, and in it, she plays an initially polite sociopath with a prostitute mother and a crackhead stepdad who takes a trip to her grandma's house when her family gets pinched by the cops and she has to go on the run from her parole officer. If anybody has not seen Freeway, does this sound like a movie that you would expect to see Reese Witherspoon in?
No, a lot. I mean, like, that's a damaged sandwich.
Right. She's brilliant in it. She is so brilliant. And after she cuffs her parole officer to the bed at her motel room home, she takes off for grandma's house in a car that breaks down and then gets caught in the car with a serial killer, Kiefer Sutherland, who masquerades as a counselor and then tries to break her down in his effort to victimize her. So Freeway premiered in the 1996 Sundance Film Festival, where it competed for the Grand Jury Prize, and it was later screened on HBO in 1996, and when it got positive feedback, it was given a brief theatrical release. But the film has basically gone on to achieve cult status, because if you love it, you just love it to pieces. And I personally love it. I'm not a movie rewatcher very often, but I've seen this movie at least 6 times. Anyways, Black comedy humor lies in the unexpected situations and actions of the characters sometimes. What's very interesting about her performance here as Vanessa Lutz, who is an illiterate teen about to lose everything and not adverse to shooting a few assholes and showing up in a diner drenched in blood, is that her performance just gives something magic to the movie. I don't know if it's her vulnerability. I don't know if it's her ability to seem very three-dimensional, but she somehow floats above the fray in a really real and human way, but also depicts a class of people, the American lower class, that is often one-dimensional in other films. So that was another reason why I'm like, you know, I want to pick this movie and talk about it. What makes her so charming in this movie, and also so funny, is that she does so much with empathy and without a tongue-in-cheek approach that keeps her audience rooting for her the whole film. She's a sociopath. Keep in mind, guys, she is like, I don't know, shooting people, doing all kinds of things. And you're still going, is she going to get to grandma's? And anyway, her ethics and her mission are get free of the big bad wolf, Kiefer Sutherland, who is actually a freeway serial killer of prostitutes who's married to Brooke Shields, and get to her grandma's house mostly intact. My favorite thing about the comedy that she plays in this film is that it's like Pollyanna meets conditioned brutality, and it kind of rips apart the quote unquote criminal slash animal and the wealth equals ethics civilization dynamic we usually see in films like this. this. My favorite funny moment is this scene. I could watch it like a billion times. Literally, my best friend and I even quote it to each other sometimes just because we find it so funny. When in the car with Bob Wolverton, Kiefer's character, he's the serial killer, and he starts to go really shady and begin his rape/kill ritual. She hops into the backseat and puts a gun to his head and then says, "If you try anything, I'm going to shoot you so many times. You should have just let me out of the car when I asked you to, Bob." And she tells him all the way he's messed up. So it's like, how many times can you watch a film in which the female character who's about to be killed takes control and then is doing the opposite of a villain's monologue, which is the character you want to root for's monologue, whilst they're smacking somebody in the head with their gun and lecturing to them. It's just such a great scene, such a great moment. And I love how she tells him all the ways he's messed up, culminating in the exchange of her saying to him, "I'm going to ask you a question and it's real, real important, okay?" And then Bob says, "What?" And then she says, and keep in mind, we haven't seen anything like this in the rest of the film. "Do you accept Jesus Christ as your Lord and personal savior?" Then he goes, "Oh my God, Vanessa, you're really scaring me. Tell me now, Bob, I need to know. Do you believe that Jesus Christ is your Lord and personal savior?" "Yes, yes, I do, I swear." "Good, that's real good." And she shoots him in the neck. And you're just so shocked, right? I mean,
that sounds quite interesting.
It's crazy.
Like, yeah, that's wild. Movie. I'll have to check this one out.
Yeah, you're watching this movie, you're going, what the heck am I seeing? But then you're also finding it just fabulous in the best possible way of black comedy, which is, this is a disturbing situation. Here is a young girl in a car with a serial killer who has a history of killing women. And here she is, all of a sudden, asking him about Jesus. Anyway, there's so many things about that scene that are just wonderful to watch. The actors are super strong. The timing in it is amazing. Her chemistry with Kiefer Sutherland in this movie is just fabulous. And I love that the film champions a teen who becomes the savior of the unempowered. Here she is with a prostitute mother who's been arrested in the car with a serial killer who kills hookers. And she's the one who is trying to stop him from this action toward an essentially unseen population. So the societal commentary that you can think about in the background of what's happening. So anyway, even the trailer shows that Bob lives after she shoots him in the neck and then also a couple more times. But you know he lives. The film is totally full of darkly comedic genius. It's violent. It's wild. It has all kinds of dark undertones. But Reese's performance, along with the veteran actors with her, is what made it a cult classic.
She's a really surprising actress. She plays these roles, and even when she played Legally Blonde, it's like she has a psychopathy to her that's really endearing.
I really agree with that.
Submerged strength. No.
No, it's kind of like eerily endearing in a way.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
It's her intensity and her naivete that she delivers very just with such excellent timing.
It's almost like she has a little bit of this neurosis under her. Like she's naive and friendly, but has this tiny bit of like neurosis under it that gives it a little bit of this subtlety into her characters.
Yeah, she does. Like an edge.
An edge, yes.
I mean, and it's present whether she's doing comedy or drama. If you haven't watched The Morning Show yet, she's wonderful in that. I think she was also a producer on that show, The Morning Show on Apple. She doesn't get a lot of opportunity to be funny in that, but she's absolutely, you can see that same intensity.
She's crazy good. I love her in Pleasantville. I really liked her in Cruel Intentions. What I love about her too is that she's obviously so very, very smart and that she's willing to be quirky with her role choices.
Do you know she owns her own clothing line as well called Draper Jane?
What? What kind of clothes are there?
They're preppy.
They're a little
relaxed.
Preppy. I think she's from the South or lives in the South.
She's from the South, most definitely.
It kind of has a Southern flair. They're really pretty, and she makes sure that the line is for all women's body types. So she's very sensitive to making sure that every woman could fit into her clothing line.
I read a quote from her when she said, "Being a Southern person and a blonde, it's not a good combination. Immediately when people meet you, they think of you as not being smart."
People believing that beautiful women are just completely ignorant and unintelligent. I'm glad she's a champion for that.
Oh, yeah. Well, let's hear Sasha's choice.
Oh, all right. Well, as soon as we started talking about funny women, the only person that popped in my mind was actually Madeleine Kahn, who is just brilliantly classic. She was born in 1942 in Boston and was a big Broadway person. She has 2 Oscar nominations, one for Blazing Saddles, one for Paper Moon.
Oh my gosh, I loved Blazing Saddles. I remember watching that as a kid and just being kind of in love with her character in that movie.
She won a Tony, she won an Emmy. She was absolutely brilliant. And I think that she would have been one of those older comedic actresses that everybody just fell in love with, like Betty White. But unfortunately, she passed away in 1999 from cancer. And pardon my language, but cancer. But Madeleine Kahn was just had some of the driest, most brilliantly timed comedy ever. And the one that I wanted to highlight was actually Clue, the movie that came out in 1985. With her and Tim Curry and Leslie Ann Warren, which is so classic. They've been talking about remaking it every year for like a decade.
Oh my God. She was singing tired of being admired.
Madeleine Kahn was just, she had this kind of dry sense of humor that you just fell in love with. And obviously Clue is a very dry movie. So the movie was written and directed by Jonathan Lynn and co-written by John Landis, which for some odd reason was super surprising to me. Ironically enough, the movie bombed in theaters completely. And one of the reasons it bombed was Jonathan Lynn thought it would be a good idea to have the 3 surprise endings to figure out who the killer was in the end of the film. He thought people would go to see the movie 3 times. And it just meant that nobody saw the movie at all because they didn't want to have to go to the movies 3 times. So that kind of backfired a little bit. But Madeleine Kahn's character in it is the most quotable. I think everybody remembers her scene where she's just like, flames on the side of my head, burning flames, which actually was not in the script. She ad-libbed that whole bit. She's just so fun. The characters that she plays, even in movies, most of the movies that she did more theater than movies, but most of the movies she did are all like kind of cult classics now. Of course, she did all of the Mel Brooks films in the 70s, Blazing Saddles, of course, which no one can forget that accent or that song, which was completely inappropriate for the age in which I watched it. Or History of the World Part 1, which her selection scene, if you know what that is, if you do not, I recommend watching it, was also incredibly inappropriate for the age in which I watched it. And also Young Frankenstein.
A full circle moment theme for your childhood.
You know, I think Clue was the only safe movie I saw with her in it.
Did you watch her television series?
I didn't. I never, and I actually, when we were discussing this coming up, I was looking for it and I could not find it because Reservation doesn't exist anymore.
I think it was called Madeleine. It was her namesake show.
Yeah, it didn't last very long, unfortunately.
That's because she died.
She was also on Cosby, the Cosby Show reboot. I remember that very distinctly.
Wow.
I mean, she went from diagnosis to death within a year. I will, pardon my language, but fuck cancer.
You can say fuck.
I can say fuck. I will say fuck. Fuck cancer. Yeah. We just have that on loop. Fuck cancer.
Yeah, that part.
But yeah, Clue is just one of those classically funny movies, and she kind of stole the show, which is saying a lot considering it's got Tim Curry. And usually when Tim Curry is in something, it's the Tim Curry show.
Yeah. It's hard to steal the scene from him. Yeah.
It's hard to steal a scene from Tim Curry. Exactly. And Leslie Ann Warren. But yeah, Madeleine Kahn, I mean, if she had lived longer, I feel like she would, again, be one of those classic comedians that everybody just is like, oh, excited to see, like a Betty White. And
like
she
Catherine
was working
O'Hara.
Until she died. Or Catherine O'Hara. Yeah, she was working until she died. And that's admirable. And she just brought that humor with her everywhere because her characters are always so much larger than life. But Mel Brooks said that in real life, she's like a very shy, quiet person. Mel Brooks is just like, yeah, she was actually really shy and quiet and kind of reserved. And my brain just does not compute because she's just such powerfully, her presence as a comedic actress is just so, I hate to say presence again, but present.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That it's just hard to imagine.
She seems really comfortable with the spotlight. So that really surprises me that she's shy.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, she definitely is someone that puts off a vibe that she's just like a star, you know? Yeah. Like someone who's just a star.
Yeah. And then when I think about it, that's, again, makes me even more mad that she didn't get to, obviously I was a big Mel Brooks fan growing up, so I got to see all of her movies, but those were in the 70s. There's a whole generation that has no idea who she is. And Clue came out in 1985, so it's an older movie. I think my mother had it on tape, and that's how I saw it.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
Right. I feel like people quote her and don't know it's her.
Right.
Really? Like, what quotes are the popular ones?
Aside from the, like, flames on the side of my head thing, I see a lot. There's the gif of her breaking, in Clue, breaking the wine glass and being like, please, can we figure out what's going on? And like just tosses the wine glass behind her. That gif is everywhere. So there's all of these people who know of her, but don't know who she is or just how brilliant she was as an actress.
She does a thing with her voice that's almost like a trilling. Like she goes real high. It's like she's going to go crazy. It's just so amazing.
It's one of those things where it's like she's got the it's like being monotone, but then raising her voice at the same time, but it still sounds monotone. It's very hard to figure out. Like it's monotone, but then raises and then still feels like it's a monotone, like dry. Her delivery is very dry. I just think that there hasn't been anyone quite like her. And I absolutely love and adore her. And I wish more people knew who she was, because again, I feel like she would have been a Catherine O'Hare or a Betty White or something like that.
She's totally unique. You're right about her delivery. It's just totally unique. She's the best thing. What did she say to the sheriff? Don't you want your sausage?
Yeah.
What? Isn't it kielbasa?
Oh, that's right. Oh, God. Yeah. I always just think of the no, 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 no. Yes. And if you have no idea what I'm talking about, don't show your children, but Jesus Christ.
Well, and her and young Frankenstein.
Oh, God. Yes. I mean, like one of the best team-ups ever. You can have your Leonardo Scorsese's, Madeline Kahn, and Mel Brooks.
I think Blazing Saddles came out in 1974. And I think I watched it when I was maybe like 8 or 10 because it was being replayed. I have never to this day, not once, forgotten that movie. And how many things can you say that stick in your memory for 30 plus years and you still remember someone from it that you don't?
Yeah.
You
never and he shot it in black and white too, which was a big deal during that time. And it still holds up. I mean, Abby Normal, I use that all the time.
Madeline Kahn also did a lot of some of the best like voice acting that people don't really think about. She did A Bug's Life and Fievel Goes West if you're young and wanted to traumatize your children. Or no, not Fievel Goes West. She did the original An American Tale. So the first one, which was also...
One thing I love about her, it's somehow she makes everything seem classy. It's like funny, but classy. And maybe that's what the magic was with Mel Brooks. Because I feel like Mel Brooks is very body comedy. You know what I mean? Yeah. Yet she's like, somehow it just seems like, oh, there's this classy woman in this and being hilarious somehow.
And I love that she always seems so small. I don't know how big she was. She always just seems like she was I'm a shorter person, so I identify. But she always seems like she's so small, but with her voice, like that she's just so powerful and that when she speaks, you're like, oh, I should pay attention to what this person is saying.
I keep thinking about young Frankenstein now.
Yes.
Especially when she gets with Frankenstein.
Oh, when he gets up to leaves and she's like, men are all the same. Just three or four quick ones and then they're off with the boys.
Great list. Thanks, everybody. All right. We will post this list on the launch day at the Hot Redhead Media blog so you can go and check out these awesome films and shows and let us know if you have more to say about them. But what snacks do we need for this movie comedy extravaganza? Whose turn is it?
Me. It's my turn for a snack. It was requested. My stuffed peppers were a request. So. Everybody, thank Jennifer for asking for the stuffed pepper recipe.
It's great
warm snack. It's kind of like a quick snack meal because you can just have one, or I bet you can't eat just one, like a Lay's potato chip or some shit. For the recipe that I use, I just put a lot of recipes together and picked my favorite parts of it. So you definitely want to get yourself some peppers. Whatever meat you want to use for your stuffing, you can ground beef, ground turkey, or even Italian sausage if that's what you prefer. I also chose to use quinoa instead of white or brown rice. But if you do use quinoa, you'll have to rinse it in a strainer before cooking it. You want to cook your ground beef, turkey sausage, or other selected ground meat in a skillet until it's brown and crumbly. You want to hollow out your bell peppers. You can either cut them horizontally or vertically, but you do want to make sure you scoop out all of the seeds and the membranes and arrange your peppers in a single layer on your baking dish. And then stuff them with your prepared filling of rice or quinoa and whatever meat you're selected with. I use some tomato sauce, tomato paste, some Worcestershire sauce, garlic powder, onion powder, salt and pepper to taste. I also sliced some cherry tomatoes and added them in as well. Top each filled pepper with a mixture of whatever your cheese of choice is and some Italian seasoning as a garnish. You want to bake your peppers until tender. I suggest 350 to 400 degrees, usually about 15 to 20 minutes. Some recipes suggest that you air fry or pre-bake your peppers, but they get too soft that way, in my
my humble opinion. And once your peppers bake, pull them out of the oven, plate them the way that you like, and have at it. And
that sounds yummy.
They were quite delicious. Actually, I still have the stuffing. I still have some in my freezer. So it freezes well. And as soon as I get some more peppers, I'll thaw it and stuff them again.
Mm, I want to eat it right now. But is Carrie going to tell me about it being healthy?
Yes, how healthy is my snack, Carrie?
Kiki, you did an amazing job. It is a very healthy snack. And I hear what you say about we do want our bell peppers to be firm. So I like that cooking hint on how to make your bell peppers firm because it really holds the stuffing of it better. Something about bell peppers. First of all, they are named bell peppers from their beautiful bell shape. And they are part of the nightshade family of vegetables. An interesting fact about the different colored bell peppers. While the green bell pepper is the unripe version of the regular bell pepper, who knew that? Red, yellow, and orange. I know. Isn't that crazy?
Yeah.
Interesting though, red bell peppers, yellow, and orange bell peppers are genetically different species of the bell pepper at full maturity. So I guess you could have like a green bell pepper of a red bell pepper because it would be like the adolescent of the adult fully ripened bell pepper, if that makes sense.
I can say that using green bell peppers, they are a little more bitter than the other colors of peppers. So that's something to keep in mind when you choose what peppers you're going to use for the recipe as well.
I guess the longer a pepper is on the vine, the sweeter and maybe the softer its texture becomes. But interestingly enough is that while green, yellow, and orange varieties have 120 milligrams, which is still 200% of your recommended vitamin C, the red bell peppers have the highest amount of vitamin C compared to the other colors of the bell peppers at 190 milligrams, which is almost three times more vitamin C than a regular orange.
Wow. Well, that's very cool. So is it Femme Blast trivia time?
Yes. Everybody ready for trivia?
So ready.
Right. Yay. Okay, so the last episode, we gave the trivia question, who was the first woman to have a self-produced comedy special on a cable television network? And the answer is Elaine Boozler. She was one of the few women working in stand-up comedy in the 1970s and 80s, and she broke ground by adopting an observational style that included frank discussions about her life as a single woman, as well as political commentary. Her performance style set her apart from the more self-depreciating humor of female stand-up predecessors such as Joan Rivers and Phyllis Diller, whose jokes often revolved around being a wife and a mother. Her 1985 self-produced comedy special Party of One was the first special by a female comedian to appear on a cable network, and she had originally approached Showtime for funding but wound up funding the project herself after executives told her that no one would watch a woman do an hour of comedy.
Whoa.
So shout out to Elaine Boozler for never giving up on what she wanted to do as a woman.
Wow.
Are we ready for next month's
question? Yeah, go for it. Question? For the next, yep.
All right. So I want to keep in line with our theme. And next month, we championing women cinematographers. So this question for next month is two-part. Just because this is so audacious to me. But who was the first woman to be nominated for Best Cinematography at the Oscars? And what year was she nominated?
Ooh, that's a good one.
Yes.
Yeah. I wonder if anybody's going to get it. If anyone knows the answer, let us know on Hot Redhead Media's social channel when we post the question.
Yay!
And thanks everyone for listening to Heat, Spotlight on Women by Women in Hollywood. To check out our newest curated watch lists and the old ones, and the episode snacks anytime, please visit www.hotredheadmedia.com for our blog posts. And if you like books as well, please sample Hot Redhead Media's bookish sister podcast, Book Tales, where HRM pairs custom cocktails with newly released books and readings. But if you like the focus on women creators in film and TV, subscribe to Heat, Spotlight on Women by Women in Hollywood for more episodes on women reshaping the narrative in Tinseltown. Episodes release once a month. Thanks again for listening. Till next time, stay awesome.